Welcome to Mixture Stories, an open-ended fantasy and sci-fi podcast for kids. We have invented a world that our imagination can explore, and you are invited to join us by listening and adding your ideas for future episodes.
So, please visit our website at makeshowstories.com or send us an email at makeshowstories@gmail.com. Now, sit back, relax, and close your eyes as we listen to Episode 18, The End Game.
The deep space signal wasn't completely unexpected. The fact was that Amos knew it would eventually happen. But happening on this particular day was either random bad timing or someone was trying hard to make his life really miserable. Amos stretched, told the Terran on the phone that he was putting her on hold for a moment, and got out of bed. His nasal tentacles swept the room, picking up the faint odor of stale laundry. Maid's surface was getting sloppy again. There'd been a lot of that lately. Why was it that an important officer such as himself should have to be concerned with such mundane tasks as ensuring that housekeeping kept to a regular schedule? He mused. There was going to have to be some changes around here soon. Maybe. Just maybe, demoting poor performing management to menial jobs hadn't been a good idea after all. He'd have to reconsider, but today, Amos didn't have time to be distracted by such matters. Recent events made sense in the kind of perverse logical way that you mostly try to ignore, but that inevitably jumps up and bites you when you least expect it. He reasoned that it must have only been a few years past her escape from Seraz on the original timeline, and there was always a remote possibility that after communications had been cut off, a rescue mission might be launched. Although the odds were against it, it seemed to have happened. Still, a bit of a surprise knowing the waiver they had signed and the estimated low return on investment of such an endeavor. It would be a low-budget affair at best, probably either totally automated or a small crew of voluntolds using refurbed equipment. Amos surmised that the management committee must have been in a very generous mood to even authorize that. Perhaps some relatives or friends had been discreetly working behind the scenes on his behalf. A well-placed dinner invitation to the most prestigious restaurant of the day, or a subtle hint dropped at a party about some fabulously profitable pyramid scheme. However, oh darn, I learned that from a particular person who is apparently now lost in System X of the second spiral arm, and a little nudge to the right members at the next council meeting could provide the funds to secure his vital knowledge through a modest rescue mission. The return on investment, while risky, would surely be fabulous. Amos had a surprise for them. It was going to be fabulous. More amazing than a star system teeming with unmanaged civilizations. Or a 100% way of predicting future supply chain failures, although those would be pretty cool too. But better than that, he had the knowledge to prevent the illusions from interfering in Triffle business. His research would not only protect their current investments, but ensure the success of future endeavors. They would be free to expand and spread their management practices to the entire civilized galaxy and beyond. And from the reports he had read from the other advanced administration teams, there was a huge need out there for a good rational system like theirs. In fact, all civilizations surveyed to date were completely unaware that they needed the Triffle's help. A truly sad situation that could be quickly remedied if the illusions were not in the picture. He was certain that senior management on Orf was unaware of the extent of Illusion interference in Triffle affairs, or they would have given an attempt to recover and debrief his team a much higher priority. But Amos wasn't offended. They couldn't be expected to know the treasure of information that he had. The council was simply following policy. Since the hasty escape from Seraz, Amos had been doing his best to hide the management group on this backward planet until he could find out how the Illusions were operating. Unfortunately, It had only been in the last few decades that the technology on this world had advanced to a point where he could do this type of research or pick up and respond to a signal from space. But things had changed, and now both his research was complete and he had picked up a signal. Maybe the timing wasn't so bad after all. Amos sat down at a small gold leaf table next to his bed and hit the hold button on the phone again. He had the answers he'd been seeking, and now, away off this primitive ball of rock and water, but he must recover his files to make it all work. Amos momentarily drifted away, lost in thought.
Sir, are you still there?
Inquired an anxious voice.
Yes, of course I am.
Amos stumbled in his words as he came back to the present.
Are you online?
Yes, sir.
Good. Is your observatory part of SETI?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's perfect. I'm sending you a code to input into the SETI transmitter.
You mean the other old red
box? No. It's a big obsolete-looking box and keyboard in a corner.
It doesn't look like it's working.
I know it doesn't look like it's working.
I've never used it.
I know you haven't used it before. Just enter the code.
That means first
no. This doesn't mean we've made contact with another civilization. Think about it. The signal's too close.
Does it signal?
No. The box doesn't send a response. Look, it just notifies a few key people, that's all. Think of them just as stuffy old scientists who have never learned how to use the internet.
How will they get the message?
And yes, they all have similar boxes collecting dust in their labs.
Part of the SETI network, these people?
Now, look, really, you don't need to know who they are. It's just to confirm that what you're seeing is, as I suspect, an old space probe.
But it'd take decades for a spacecraft to get out to that distance.
Yes. At that distance, it would have had to have been launched, let's say, 30, 40 years ago, probably in the 70s.
Can you explain how two signals merged into
No,
one?
I don't know why it looked like there were two and then one. The equipment's old. Maybe it was just having a bad day. There were many untraceable missions back then. It's probably a rogue Indian or Brazilian spacecraft. We need to confirm this. That's why you're sending the message. Email?
Can't we use email?
No, if we sent this over an open channel and it got loose before we checked it out, yes, it would be a bit of a media field day, wouldn't it? Now, look, please send the code on the old transmitter.
Amos listened as the obstinate student clacked away at the ancient keys. It was getting harder to deal with Terrans, especially the smart ones. Amos was so looking forward to leaving this planet. He hung up the phone after promising the Terran grad student a rather generous enhancement to her scholarship, as long as no word of this event ever leaked out. With a sigh of resignation, he slouched back into the stiff leather of his chair. Now that the message had been sent, it would take 8 hours to reach the transmission point. And another 8 for the ship to arrive. That meant he only had 16 hours to recover his research and prepare for his departure. Amos smiled. His plan to counter the illusions would guarantee him a senior posting. He just needed to get his research to head office. Amos booted up a small computer on his desk and searched for Raymer's last progress report on the AI escape. It indicated that the Weasley thing was still free, but trapped in the main network.
Excellent.
Despite Raymer's recent display of disrespect, Amos knew he could always count on him to come through. And he also knew exactly what would tease the AI out of hiding. But he needed to talk to Raymer about implementing his plan. He texted him as he dressed, but Raymer didn't respond. Odd, he thought. Raymer always had his phone on. So Amos called building security to see where Raymer was. The answer was puzzling. Raymer was apparently in the virtual reality unit, a place he had opposed and rarely went to. Amos called for his car. The VR unit was housed 50 kilometers away from head office in its own large complex on the other side of the island. Security was always tight around the virtual reality unit. So even when Amos's gargantuan official, G.L. Lemel, rolled up to the gates, he had to wait while the guards nervously fumbled around, confirming his identity. Finally, satisfied and relieved, they raised the electrified barrier and waved the oversized vehicle through. This complex had been one of Gia's greatest dirty little secrets. There was no way Amos was going to let himself or his team be exiled again. So their activities had to be indistinguishable from the indigenous population. Despite many protests, he had managed to keep the members of his team hidden here on this small island, while a select group of Terrans implemented their plans and oversaw their operations. To the Aleutian, it would look like a natural thread, weaving yet another in an innumerable flow of possibilities. As it turned out, the Terrans were relatively easy to recruit. In exchange for their loyalty and vow to keep the true nature of the Trifle secret, they were given a simple treatment that extended their life by 50%. A mutually beneficial exchange, if ever there was one. Even better, the local population had a convenient natural tendency to allow themselves to be subjugated by a small elite. The more difficult and more intelligent species on the planet, a large, long-lived tropical turtle, had been easily eradicated after the Trifle arrival by convincing the much more populous and trusting Terrans that turtle shells were highly desirable as exclusive court punch bowls. Once the trend caught on in the royal houses of Europe and Asia, the gentle, intelligent, but suspicious beings were doomed, and Gia was free to exploit the planet. Now, as the only indigenous sentient life form left, the Terrans rarely stepped out of line. And those rare Terrans, who had either accidentally discovered or realized that Gia had become the true world government, were interned here at the VR unit and placed in a simulated world for the duration of their lives. Although Raymer and some of the executive complained about the expense, it was the most efficient and innocuous way to deal with them. The disappearances were easily covered up by an infinite number of explanations. Some people were lost at sea, others lost in the wilderness. Some ran away, a convenient industrial accident, etc. Amos had also insisted that a few every year be attributed to alien abduction, which was, after all, the truth. He was proud of this system. Using it, they had so far hidden from the Aleutians. Amos was convinced that there were a few of their agents on this planet. That would be the most rational explanation for the local propensity to create legends about magical beings. But that only sweetened Amos's sense of success. It was a brilliant plan that they had executed right under the Aleutians, interfering self-righteous noses. Awesome, he told himself, was the only way to describe his brilliant handling of the situation. And Amos was sure it was destined to become one of the set of great cases that every future admin student would have to learn. The thought warmed Amos's heart and cheered him up. Absent-mindedly, he looked out the window of a limousine at the full October moon. And for a brief second, he thought he saw the tiny dark silhouette of a figure on a broom, streaking past the glowing silver orb. Amos scolded himself. He'd been listening to too many local stories. It was definitely time to leave the boonies and get back to a civilized star system. The driver pulled the limo up beside a large sand-colored concrete building. Its designers weren't trying hard to hide it, but neither was it their intention for this structure to draw much attention to itself. It was the exact opposite of a landmark. In this sense, it was that perfect combination of boring and nondescript, which gave no hint as to its true purpose, but was specific enough not to invite speculation. Amos had worked hard with the Terran architects to achieve this. The low exterior walls were completely blank, with the exception of a small metal door, which they were now parked in front of. Amos anxiously got out and placed his hand on a glass pad mounted to the wall. The metal door opened in, revealing yet another security checkpoint. As he entered, the guards quickly straightened their uniforms and stiffly watched as Amos punched his access codes into a terminal. Clearly, they hadn't been expecting anyone.
Relax, guys. This isn't a surprise inspection.
Amos announced to no one in particular.
I'm just here to talk to the VP, who for some reason has chosen to spend his evenings keeping her slumbering guests company.
The guards exchanged flirt of anxious glances, then quickly opened up the security doors after the computer accepted Amos's credentials. After he had passed through, Amos turned and noticed the guards picking up magazines and entertainment devices that they had hastily abandoned on his arrival. He thought.
Perhaps surprise inspections might be a good idea.
He made a mental note.
Recommend scheduling some for entertainment at the next management retreat.
He smiled and then walked away. The facility had grown considerably since his last visit, so it required a brisk 10-minute walk to bring Amos to the observation and control area that overlooked the stasis chamber. The technicians in attendance snapped to attention when they saw him enter. Amos was about to ask about Raymer when he spotted them lying on a terminal table, apparently hooked into one of the simulated worlds. The temperature in the room seemed to go up instantly. Papers were quickly straightened and hidden in drawers. Windows on computer screens instantly switched, or computers suddenly turned off. The expression on the tech's faces reminded Amos of kids who had been caught fooling around while the teacher was out of the room.
"What's going on here?"
demanded Amos in his most managerial voice. The lead attendant sheepishly approached.
"Sir, honestly, we didn't have a choice. He told us he had executive clearance and ordered us to do it. I know it's against regulations, but he insisted on entering one of the simulated worlds. The one based on the popular internet game Time Questers."
Amos wasn't sure what to make of this. It was out of character for Raymer to act without consulting him. Something was wrong, and it wasn't at all what he needed now. He sighed.
More bad timing. Just when I thought things were starting to look up for once.
It was less than half a day before the pickup. He didn't have time for political intrigue.
"Okay, what's his recall code?"
Amos demanded.
"The four keys, sir,"
someone volunteered from the back of the room.
"That's so darn obvious. No wonder the security has been so sloppy recently. I thought we created the policy requiring the use of complex, nonsensical passwords."
"Well, it didn't make any sense to us when we set it up, sir."
"Whatever. Revoke it."
"But, sir, that'll..."
Amos curtly cut the attendant off.
"Trap him in there? I know. I want to keep him there until I understand what's going on. And this does have executive priority, because I'm standing here giving the order. And next time, check to make sure someone really does have my authority before you act. Now, grab all his computer records for the last 4 days and forward them to me. I'll expect them by the time I get back to my office."
The now pale technicians in attendance watched as Amos left, then snapped into action. The half-hour ride back to the office in the soft warmth of the pre-dawn light did little to calm Amos's racing mind. Had he missed something? Had the dissent on the executive group grown to the point of outright deceit? And if so, this was unheard of behavior in a Trifle management team. It was the way Terrans acted, not the GA. Perhaps their isolation from Orf had allowed too many human traits to rub off on them. After he returned to head office, he'd have to order a full staff rotation. The sun was optimistically breaking over the horizon of the Caribbean Sea as Amos finally sat down at his office computer. He waved his hand over a hidden control on his desk and the windows darkened, plunging the room back into an artificial night. He logged on to his desktop and found that the requested information had been placed in a folder on his hard drive.
"Well, at least someone's doing their job right, so there's still parts of this organization that actually work,"
Amos confided to himself. Raymer's computer and phone records glared back at him. They had the answers he was after. Good thing he had recently authorized the installation of secret keyloggers and phone taps. Wasting no time to get down to the immense task at hand, Amos, in one luxuriant motion, cracked the knuckles on all 16 fingers and went to work sifting through the mountains of data. He checked for references to the Illusion, then the AI, Amos, personal projects, anything that would hint at what Raymer was up to. As the tropical day faded into night again, Amos found what he was looking for. a text message to the local network admin requesting the isolation of the virtual reality system, and a message to a sysop, giving him the address of an internal port that needed to be left open. It was obvious that Raymer had trapped the AI in the VR system and went in to find it. He didn't have time for such a refined approach, or to speculate on what Raymer was up to. Instead, he would have to make a copy of the entire simulation and extract his AI, research, and encryption keys later. Amos picked up the phone, called a VR unit, and texted his driver. Finally, he erased the files he'd been looking at and left. Jarl hated the evening shift. She had repeatedly told her supervisor that she was a morning person, but he had insisted that she needed seniority to be moved to a more desirable daytime schedule. She was still disgruntled as she filled out yet another transfer request form when a call came through. The telephone startled her. No one phoned her unit at night. Thinking it was a wrong number or some automated telemarketing system, Jarl reached for her surly, "Leave me alone, you idiot," voice, and picked up the receiver.
"How'd you get this number? It's unlisted."
To her total shock and embarrassment, it was the GS CEO. Great, she thought, imagining what cleaning floors for 10 years would be like. But to her surprise, it was a simple request right from the top.
"I need you to make a copy of the entire Time Quester world, including avatars, gameplay, recent mods, everything, and bring it to the observation area ASAP. And do it personally. I'll meet you there."
After Jarl recovered from her shock, she realized that this was her chance to impress the brass and finally get her transfer. She jammed a loose drive into the slot in her terminal and started the copy. A moonlight glow from the night lighting in the stasis chamber spilled into the observation room, bathing everything in a pale, ghostly blue, including Raymer's body. It gave Amos the creeps, so he turned away to look out over the surreal artificial night where the inmates lay. Amos didn't understand why they bothered. The inmates were all unconscious. Why would they care if it was night or day? Maybe the nightlight took less power, Amos surmised, and if that was the case, they should use it all the time. He'd have to leave a directive about that before he left. Harsh, fluorescent light from the hallway stabbed into the blue gloom of the observation area, unexpectedly breaking Amos's train of thought. A flesh young technician flowed in behind. Still blinded by the glare, she stopped a few steps into the space and peered around nervously.
"I'm by the window. Did you bring the copy?"
Relieved and visibly excited, she moved out of the beam of light cast by the open door and into the shadows.
"Yes, sir. I have it. And a copy of the system files, too, in case you want to run the simulation someplace else."
Amos liked this person. She was proactive and thinking ahead. He'd have to leave a memo about promoting her. Maybe even to Raymer's job, he mused.
"Great work. I'll make sure your supervisor hears about this. I think a promotion is in order."
Jarl smiled and was about to thank Amos when a muffled crash penetrated the observation area from the adjoining server room. A heavy door between the spaces burst open, and immediately the lights went out. As the backup power started to kick in, something was wrong. The immersive systems weren't rebooting. Raymer began to move and groan. Jarl ran to the window and looked into the stasis chamber. Then, with an expression of disbelief, turned to Amos.
"Sir, they're all waking up. All the inmates. What should we do?"
Thanks for listening to episode 18, The Endgame. Our next story will be out around November 21st, so please check your podcatcher then. P.S. You can always send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com. or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com and add your ideas for future episodes or give us some feedback. And last but not least, we'd like to thank David H., who created the new opening music for The Endgame.